If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill at its lowest price ever and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first and only GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Based on advertised cash price for 30-day supply of medication only. Membership required. Fee not included, and billed separately. Weight Loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
My dad taught me a lot, including how easy it is to forget to cancel things. So I downloaded Experian, my BFF, big financial friend. Experian could help me cancel my unused subscriptions and lower my bills, saving me hundreds a year. Get started with the Experian app today. Your big financial friend's here to help you save smarter. Results will vary. Not all bills or subscriptions eligible. Savings not guaranteed. $631 a year. Average savings with 1+ negotiations and 1+ cancellations. Paid membership with connected payment account required. See Experian.com for details.
Experian.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
Welcome to Maximize Your Hunt, the podcast dedicated to those who want the most out of their hunting property. This podcast explores land management, habitat improvement, and hunting strategies that will help you maximize your time in the field. Follow along as industry professionals that live and breathe white-tailed deer share their secrets to success. And now, the founder of Whitetail Landscapes, your host, John Teeter.
Hi, I'm John Tito, Whitetail Landscapes. This is Maximize Your Hunt. Welcome back, everybody. I just finished up a busy weekend. I had my habitat day. 20 brave individuals came out to my property, and we got a chance to learn, and it was a masterclass. I think it was, from what some said, the best class they attended. Others have been to other classes from other named individuals, and they said beyond far, reached their expectations and exceeded them. So comparably, I feel good. I felt like it was a class. If you want to participate or attend a class like this, this is a more affordable way to get in contact with me, to participate. So consider that. You know, on top of that, I think we will do a podcast to get into some of the specifics so we can relay some of the information. I want people to learn from the experience. I just think folks were blown away, and I'm just completely appreciative that those individuals that attended. You know, I appreciate you, your clients, you're part of the system, you're going to have success. And I think that's the most important thing. I want to frame one other thing. A lot of people talk about success, and I sometimes say this to my clients. I think they may take it wrong. Success doesn't mean, you know, a giant 160 class buck. It doesn't mean any of that stuff. It could be a small nuance or aspect of your design that came together that started to make sense. You know, that deer traveled through that corridor, or that buck used that water hole, whatever the case may be. Interest in your property and investing in your property. It's a time commitment and management thing. A lot of folks are distracted on what to do. Anyhow, so enough of that. I just want those that are interested in attending. I may or may not have a class here. It's a lot to put together for me, but I do appreciate everybody who participated. So if you are interested, reach out. Okay, enough of that. We got Brad Harper back, Harper Growing Solutions. He's got some new products out. We're going to talk about those a little bit and probably some specific attributes or things to consider for this fall. Brad, hey, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Good, man. Where are you right now? What part of the country are you in?
I'm actually in Michigan, but I'm in the middle of the state here. We just got done doing a couple jobs this morning, and I got to head towards the thumb tomorrow for a couple meetings. So just kind of hanging out in the middle right now.
Good, good. I'm happy I got you. So we're in between things, both you and I. Let's talk a little bit about your products. You've got some new products that are out, and I think people probably need to hear a little bit about what you just recently released. I think I had watched some videos like recently with John Comp. I think he released some stuff. And so I want to hear a little bit about your products. What's going on with you?
Yeah, so we're super excited about it. We just kind of launched that new line in our new partnership with Full Spectrum Products. The last line we sold, I mean, great products, great guys, nothing bad to say about them. It was just more so an opportunity for me to be able to do a lot more of what I wanted and be able to kind of have my hand in the formulation side of things. And that was super exciting for me, looking at soil samples constantly. It's just, you know, you start to see stuff over and over, and you're like, man, if we could just do these couple things, that would really allow a ton of people to be able to slowly but surely fix their soil without having to go out, you know, add an extra two or three products to each tank. It just makes it more of a hassle. So by doing so, I'm super excited about it, to just be able to really put stuff together in order to really help guys at the end of the day.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about some of the full spectrum products that you got out there. And, you know, what are the benefits to those? I know a lot of these foliar sprays, and you see a lot of them coming out for different companies. We'll probably want to compare and contrast a little bit, but let's talk about your product specifically. What products are out in the market? And right now, folks are thinking about fall food plots. So let's try to connect the dots there.
Yeah. So normally we always start with the liquid lime. You know, there's been a ton of talk about that, whether it's snake oil or a ton of guys saying, yeah, we've been using it, it works great. And so I actually just had a great conversation with a guy today talking about that. And the thing to remember is liquid lime, number one, it has to be calcium carbonate. There's a couple other things that it could be, but it's not going to be very efficient. So when we look at ag lime, calcium carbonate is in there. That's what's making the reaction in the soil. So if you're looking for a liquid lime, that's the best way to go, is get that calcium carbonate. When you look at a ton of ag lime, it can be anywhere from 6 pounds to 18 pounds of calcium carbonate in that ton. And then in the liquid lime that we have, it's actually a 13-pound gallon. And that allows us to technically be equivalent to a ton, depending on what mine you're getting it from. You know, there's a lot of variables there, but our lime has a really good CCE, and I was able to add a few things to a very concentrated calcium carbonate product that now is going to allow us to penetrate the soil better. It's going to technically move horizontally in the soil and be able to open that up a lot more. So a lot of the times, whether we see really high hydrogen in a soil sample or a really high magnesium, this product is going to be able to do a few different things in a soil profile. So it's not just changing pH anymore like some other liquid lime products. I'm super excited about it because over the course of the last few years, I can't tell you how many soil samples have been really high in magnesium, and you just end up very tight soils, and it's just almost like clay, and just really trying to get some products in order to help that out. So every time you spray that now, you're going to be slowly but surely, obviously raising pH, but you're going to get calcium in the soil profile, and you're going to be able to really open up those soils that are high magnesium. So that's pretty cool, and we're super excited about that one.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about some of the deficiencies that you've seen in the past. I think you brought a few topics up there, and I think right off the bat, magnesium to calcium ratios, there's usually ideal goals, and I think people play around with that based upon CEC, soil texture. Those are considerations and all that. What do you typically hit for, and do you create a product that has a balanced cal-magnesium kind of scenario there, or, are they separate products? You apply them separately? Just kind of wondering a little more about that.
Yeah, so when I'm looking at those as far as the base saturations go, I'm kind of wanting to see my magnesium lower than 18% and my calcium above 70%. That's kind of super easy numbers to take a look at when you're looking at your soil sample. As far as having a product for magnesium, we really don't, because what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to focus on the calcium, trying to, raise that part up. We're trying to raise pH and lower hydrogen levels, as well as lower those magnesium levels for the guys that are high. Now, let's say if a guy has maybe a lower magnesium level of single digits, and he's like, well, why would I want to lower that anymore? Well, that's not really going to off-put that as much as when you have a high magnesium. Once you get lower to those single-digit numbers, it doesn't make as big of an effect lowering that as what it does when it's really high. And when you kind of start to offset those and get to maybe that 18 or 15, 16 magnesium, that in that sweet spot right there, once you get below that, it doesn't make as drastic of a change. So it's not like you're just going to keep lowering that every time you do that. It kind of starts to level out, and they just work together really well at that point.
So one of the things that I've struggled with, and I think calcium is important, at least that I'm aware of for more phosphorus uptake. And I know there's a few other things involved with that, boron and zinc, but in my familiarity with calcium is the ability for calcium to flocculate the soil, meaning expand and open up, is critical for air infiltration, which one of the mechanical tests, and this is something I did with the clients this weekend, is I showed them a soil probe that I had, a penetrometer. I stuck it in the ground, sunk it all the way towards the top of the penetrometer, and the PSI, or pounds per square inch, never exceeded 150. And when I showed them that, I said, try to do this with your soil. If you can do this with your soil, you're there. And I know that's a function of how I manage my soil. I do light tillage in some capacity, and I think people are really scared about tillage. But for me, I think it allows that calcium in some capacity to spread out, amongst other things that I'm applying on my landscape. What are your thoughts on anything I just said there, right, from your perspective? Anything hit home with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So we deal with that on the ag side all the time. And I think it's even more relevant in the food plot world, because it's not like we have this huge field, we can run this huge ripper through and work the ground up, Yeah. It's kind of, we have what we have, and it's just maybe quad and, a little pull behind equipment. So it's not like we can rip that open and help that. So we are kind of focusing more on cover crops and letting those crops do some work for us, as well as having access to some of these liquids to do that work for us. And when you talk about that with the penetrometer, I mean, once you get really high magnesium or you have really compacted soil, that just really prevents those roots from growing. I mean, those roots are not going to be able to penetrate that and really branch out once you have those high compacted or really high magnesium soils. So having that, for you to go all the way to the top, that's amazing. That's awesome stuff.
Yeah. I got a quick question on that though, Brad, because One of the things I'm struggling, this is a question I have for you, and I'm using you as a consultant. If I'm trying to improve my soil and I get, you know, down 4 or 5 inches with my penetrometer, all of a sudden I hit 300, 400 PSI. I had a hard pan, and that's likely a result of maybe some of the tillage practices or just maybe my soil composition. At that point in time, would you think it would be acceptable, you know, so 3 to 4 inches hitting that hard pan, to consider some tillage, smart tillage, at least an inch or two below that, so inch 5 or 6 to start to release that, and then applying your chemical, or excuse me, your fertilizer in that capacity and doing that every so often just to get it in the soil to help loosen it up? Is that a strategy you would recommend, or is that a bad practice?
I would say no. I mean, if you're at 4 to 5 inches, that's something that you're kind of losing a couple inches where most of those roots grow. You know, most roots are growing in the top 6. So if you're hitting it at 4, you could be losing out on a lot of tonnage because you just can't get that root to go any deeper. You're losing nutrients. You're losing lack of moisture holding capacity. So on the ag side, when it comes to that, absolutely, we can till that up. Now, when guys don't have that, by doing some cover crops, you know, trying to grow some tillage radish, maybe mixing in some alfalfa, letting that grow for a couple years, trying to just really break that up. And of course, using our products on something like that is great. And when you look at, you know, applying that once, it's not like you're going to apply that once and you're going to get through and all of a sudden that just magically opens up. That's going to be kind of yeah, a couple year process. I would say in conjunction with cover crops, you know, I mean, yeah, you could put our liquid out there for 3-4 years in a row and you would get there. But in order to do that faster, I mean, something like tillage radish or alfalfa would just help to, you know, make that whole process speed up a little bit. But if you do have the tillage equipment, that's not a bad idea.
So let me just ask you this question. You brought up two, I think, great plants for that example is tillage radish and alfalfa, you know, being able to penetrate deep in the soil. Let me ask you this question. On my property, I'm dealing with curly dock, and it's a yellow-rooted plant. It's got a relatively surface area, not deep tap root, but it does a good job of in penetrating itself and holding tight to those dense soils. You know, I've started to look at the landscape and start to assess kind of why I'm having these issues with these particular plants. And I'm wondering for you, like a plant like curly dock, you know, why does it persist in my landscape? I know we've had moist areas, and I don't know if you deal with that particular plant or a similar plant you could talk about, but it's just become really prevalent this year because I think all the moisture that we have, and I'm trying to pull it out by hand, and boy, it's a pain in the butt. And I'm trying to get away from herbicides, so I'm just looking at, hey, you ever dealt with that plant and any idea how to remedy it's, you know, because maybe it's a mineral deficiency. I'm not really sure why that is the case.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. And I want to say, like, I'll bring this back to calcium. It's really interesting when you have soils that are calcium deficient or high hydrogen or high magnesium, it seems that you have weeds that literally will grow there more prolifically than others that are there to almost fix that, if that makes sense.
It makes 100%.
When we look at calcium, if you have a field that has very good calcium levels, rarely are you going to see it full of dandelions. But it's so interesting that we come in and you see this food plot that's full of dandelions, and the guy's like, hey, I can't get rid of these. I mean, they just keep coming back. It doesn't matter how much I spray. There's just dandelions everywhere. And sure enough, we look at the soil sample, and that 100% correlates. And I've seen that a ton on the ag side, to where certain plants will grow, and it almost is trying to fix itself by doing so. So like you said, with some sort of mineral deficiency, I think that is absolutely right. And sometimes it's just one of those things where, hey, let's just grow some crops and let's try to, you know, kind of drown them out. Let's outcompete them. But that could be hinting towards something. Now, exactly what that might be without seeing a soil sample, I don't have the best answer for that, but it's definitely something to think about.
And I think that's a great topic. I want to pause there. I'm going to do a podcast on this specifically, talking about some of the deficiencies in landscape. Particularly, I have high metals in my soil, so that creates other issues. Hence why I have a lot of burdock across my property and a few other non-preferred plants. One of the things that are killing me right now is Carolina horse nettle, and it took over an area where I did some no-tilling, and I'm sitting back saying, okay, I did a no-till situation here. I did apply herbicide, which I try not to do very frequently, but I didn't have a good process in place. And I'm like, okay, what is the mineral deficiency that's promoting this particular plant? So I kind of want to pause there. That's definitely a topic I think people need to think through. It's not just add this, add this. What's going on with my soil? There's deficiencies. All right, I want to bounce back to something. And so we talked a little bit about your, you know, your lime product. Let's talk about some other products that you're releasing. So let's get in a couple more.
Yeah, so the next product kind of on the lineup is called AP. It stands for all purpose. And that's literally what it is. We can spray that on the soil at planting. We can do a foliar application with it. And that's a product that we really went to the drawing board a few different times. And it's just like we got done and no, we can do better. And I'm super happy with how it turned out that there's a ton of carbon in there. You got humic acid and fulvic acid in there, which is great for everything. You know, it's a 1-5-10, so you got a little nitrogen in there, decent amount of phosphorus and potassium. There's a ton of amino acids, and there's actually a bunch of micronutrients in there. And what I was really trying to do with that is when we go out at planting and we put this on, now we're adding micronutrients. I really always try to encourage guys to, like, let's say if your rate, your recommendation rate is a gallon, go put 2 quarts at planting and then come back 2 to 6 weeks later if you're able to and do another 2 quarts. That way you still hit your gallon, but now you just did a foliar application plus you still got some down to the soil. So it's like we can really get those micronutrients right into the plant that way. But at the same time, every time we put that out, we're slowly but surely being able to help our micronutrient levels in the soil. No. So that's that we're super excited about.
Now, I love everything you just said, and I love the combination that you just mentioned in there. One thing that I heard from a pretty well-known guy, we've talked about him offline, but he talks about application. He said continued application of something, not at an intense rate, meaning like an appropriate rate, not to a toxicity level, but you're applying something frequently over time, not in a mass, but spread out over time, is more productive than one shot. And I think that's probably an important thing to think about is that consistency of application and not being all like, hey, you know, the moron principle, or, you know, let's save this now because we're in trouble. Think about doing things over time and spreading out. You don't have to put the full rate. You could put it over increments of time. Again, if you have, you know, the ability to do that. let me shoot out something kind of interesting. So today, post this habitat day I just had, I went over and I was running my, I put in like sprinkler systems in my food plot. And, you know, I'm just playing with some new things cause I got some new equipment and I'm just kind of goofing around. And one of the things I was thinking about doing is I don't like to run my tractors on my food plots. I know that doesn't seem sensible for a lot of people, but I'm trying to reduce the compaction levels or do it when it's timely. We don't have, you know, wet ground for a period of time. And I was thinking about this. I said, you know, I build these compost teas and I spread them on the landscape. I said, you know, why don't I just hook up this sprinkler system, you know, and it shoots, you know, you can control the nozzle, you know, output, et cetera. Why don't I just put 150 gallons out in this food plot? And I started thinking about that. You know, that's not a bad way to go to apply some of these foliar sprays. And it maybe it's not even distribution, so to speak, like I have on the back of my sprayer, but a kind of a new idea and concept I was just thinking about today. It's kind of a neat idea. Fill up an IBC tote, depending on what your output needs to be. You know, you can kind of go through what you know, your output really is. Again, you've got to be smart on what type of water you use, and you want to have structured water that doesn't have bicarbonates in it or anything that, like hard water, like 300 parts per million. You want to have a lower part per million so you don't impact, in this case, you know, some of the foliar application. I think those are all critical maybe, but I don't know, Brad, just an idea I was thinking today. I'm like, huh, maybe this is a way to get on my fields, but not get in my field, so to speak. So I don't know. We'll see how it works. I don't know. We'll try.
No, absolutely. I mean, there's so many times on the ag side where we're going out through irrigation. We're running, you know, products through the pivots. We're running products through overhead and through the drip. And you're just, you know, you're fertigating and you're able to technically do that, save some time. Plus you're getting water out. Now, one thing that I'll just chip in, a lot of guys with our liquid lime on the ag side, they love doing that because it is very thick. And even guys on the ag side, they might not want to, you know, get bigger nozzles, or they don't want to have that many gallons per acre. So then that's just another way to be able to, hey, let's run this through the sprinkler system. So, I mean, that is awesome. And that's a great idea. And it works really well on the ag side. We do that all the time.
Okay. Yeah. That's just an idea I had. I love the product opportunities here. Now, a lot of people don't understand humic acids, and I'm just going to ask you really quick, what is the benefit of humic acids, and you know, is a good thing. You're adding acid, right? And when people think acid, they think, well, that's not good. So what does acid do? Is it a bad thing? Is it a good thing? Just maybe explain a little bit about that.
Yeah, so when you look at, let's look at organic matter. Organic matter is basically carbon that's available to the plants. So when we look at carbons, you have that humic acid, you have fulvic acid, and you know, there's long chain carbons. We can go down the list of that. But when you look at humic acid specifically, that's going to be responsible for not only taking care of some of the microbes. I mean, the plants need carbon, so they're using it. It's just, I mean, it's almost, I'm trying to think of a good way to really break this down with boring everybody.
It's not boring. I'm asking the question. I think people want to know, because you said humics and like, what is humic? Is humics good? Does humics help me? Like, what is it? I add humics to all my stuff. So I think people want to know, hey, do we need to add a humic? Is that a benefit? Does it help translocation? What does it actually do? You know?
Yeah. So, and that's, I would say that is definitely one of the buzzwords now, you know, that's been kind of going through the ag industry probably the last 5-6 years. And it's definitely a buzzword. So touching on it is great. So when you look at, like I said, when you look at your organic matter, and that's basically carbon that the plants can use and feed off of. So humic acid being a carbon, that's literally what's composed of organic matter. Yeah. To try to go ahead.
I try to say to folks, like my simple John definition is it's kind of like what we've done is I've built compost and I've run water through it, structured water. And that's, well, I guess I should explain what structured is. Structured doesn't have the same composition that you may have for, there's a, I don't know if you mess around with this, paramagnetism. Do you screw around with any of that stuff?
So, not too much, no.
Yeah, all right. So some of the stuff I learned from some class I had a few years ago, and basically detensioning the water. And so you're running detention water through a substance. Let's just say it's compost, and it's you know, good compost. It's that's been there for a while. You've got a process, and then you're collecting this substance that, you know, pours through there. And a lot of that substance that comes out of it's going to be usually humic acid, and it's going to come out and it's going to be applicable because it's basically composted material that you've essentially just extracted in liquid form. I mean, that's essentially what I think some people could use. So you got this organic material, you run some water in it, you collect it. That's a form of humic acid in some capacity. I mean, it depends how it's been broken down and processed, but you know, likely that's going to have elements of humic acid in it. That's a simple way to look at it that I've tried to explain to people. I think that's correct.
Yeah, no, that's right. And like I said, when you break that down, I mean, you have the humic, you have the fulvic, it's technically all the carboxylic acids, it's all carbon.
Yes, yep.
So especially when you're talking about compost and that stuff just is breaking down and breaking down, you're just creating carbon. Same thing when you apply manure, you know, that's a portion of carbon that's in there, and it all just breaks down over time, all turning into organic matter, which is just a component of humic, fulvic, carboxylic acid, the long chain carbons, basically tied together. So when you think about like, what is it? Just the best way I think to look at it is you're literally applying organic matter to your food plots that is available for the biology, that is available for the plants.
And I guess you could say it's kind of food. I mean, it's kind of food for the plant, so to speak. And I think that would be helpful for people to just have a layman like my kind of focus on this. What's a layman ways to explain? What's the benefit? You're feeding the plants. Let me ask you a separate question. So we said it's acidic, and I know humics because I've tested them because I've got my meters and I look at, you know, what my acidity levels and my compost teas and humics. Humics can get pretty acidic. And is that a bad thing? Does that help the plant accept, you know, certain chemicals or materials, or is it good or bad? And I just want your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I would say overall it's great.
Okay.
It's most, you can't go wrong doing so.
All right. So folks that are scared shouldn't be that scared. It's not a bad thing for the plant specifically. I think plants I think one of the things that I think people miss out on is usually chemicals translocate better when they're more acidified. And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind, so to speak. I think, you know, your soil, obviously in many capacity around here, is acidic, and we can't be scared of adding acidity to it. You just got to recognize that not everything is going to be alkaline, and you can change the demographic of alkaline and acidity by adding or subtracting things, maybe for another podcast, but certainly an interesting to think through if you're worried about that type of stuff.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when you're adding that, I mean, you're not 2 tons for the dirt. You're spoon feeding that in. So just because that does have a low pH, it's not going to be, you know, completely turn your soil sample upside down. It's not going to ruin anything. I mean, like I said, it literally is food for the biology, food for the plants. I mean, technically for bacteria to reproduce, they need 5 parts carbon, 1 part nitrogen. So then anytime you do that, you're literally directly feeding biology in your soil.
Yeah, that sounds good. All right. Any other products that you got out there right now that we need to get out to folks?
Yeah. So we have the next product in line is, we call it Starter Plus. And basically what it is, it's a bunch of amino acids mixed with humic and fulvic acid again. But those amino acids are directly related to root branching. So we want to get that on right at planting and be able to push that early root growth and that early root development in order to get some branching. You know, I mean, you got a big taproot, that's all great, but I want those fine root hairs that are really doing a bunch of the heavy lifting as far as pulling in that moisture and the nutrients. And the amino acid part is just so critical that when you look at other starters like 10-34-0, I mean, that's not protected, so that gets tied up in soils very quickly. And you're really not getting a lot of phosphorus, and there's no amino acids in that. So you're just pushing phosphorus to the plant. Nope. And when you, Brad, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, just really quick, aminos. And I think some people that in the chain of developing complete or, you know, complete proteins, is that helpful in that process? Is that one of the rationale behind having aminos in there?
Yeah. So basically when you look at photosynthesis, that plant is doing photosynthesis to make amino acids in order to make proteins. Obviously, there's a whole bunch of steps we just skipped, but by providing that plant with amino acids that it already needs, we can actually take a look at what's in the plant and figure out what amino acids take care of what job in the plant.
Okay.
So by giving it the exact amino acids, in which obviously we still don't even know all of them, we're just saying few of them. So by giving that plant those amino acids directly, A, we're able to make that plant more efficient because it doesn't have to do photosynthesis in order to make that amino acid now. We're just giving it to the plant direct, and we're giving it ones that are very responsible for that root development, root growth, and in the lateral branching of roots. So we're able to really make that plant be way more efficient than normal by skipping all those steps.
That's awesome, incredible, and certainly important for folks. Please think about that. Time of application. So just, Brad, real quick, time of application at planting, right after planting, what stage would we apply this? Multiple intervals of application? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so normally products like that are at planting only.
Okay.
What I did with this product as well is we added micronutrients to it too. So that way, some guys, if you wanted to only use that starter at planting, you can. Then if you wanted to come back with the AP, you can. We normally will come and do a little bit at planting on all crops, but then if you wanted to give that plant a boost, or like brassicas, if you got brassicas that are turning purple, there is a lot of phosphorus in this product. So you could do a foliar application of this, not only help with your phosphorus deficiency, but that's just going to push more roots. So you're not just limited to at planting. That's just probably the mostly used application. But you are able to use this as a foliar, which is great no matter what. I mean, if you need to give that a boost, that'll do a great job.
All right. I'm impressed with this stuff so far. You're speaking my language, man. I'm loving this. I'm loving everything you're coming out with.
And that's why I added micros to that too. I wanted to kind of, same concept, I want to slowly but surely keep adding those in. And that way we can, you know, kind of fix our ratios, number one. But I don't think we're ever getting enough micros to our plants to really be, you know, we don't know how good of a job we can. That plant's always under stress. It's always searching for nutrients. So if we can slowly but surely spoon feed those micros, we're just going to see really good results from that.
The all-purpose one that you talked about earlier, just to backtrack, what about application in orchards? Have you thought a little bit about that from what you just relayed to me? Is that something folks should consider just based on the balance of the macros that are part of that equation in the AP blend?
Absolutely. We use that literally on everything from turf to corn and beans to all of our vegetables. That product goes out on the ag side across every, and I mean, orchards is a great example of that. Normally what we're trying to do with our fruit trees for food plot guys, I mean, I want guys to go out like in May when they're going to go spray their clover. And normally we'll do our AP and our calcium product with that. And when you're doing that, go hit all your trees. I mean, all your spruce, you're going to have a flush on all your spruce and pine trees at that time. That'll help that. And then all your orchard trees, you're going to be in bloom. So when you do that during bloom, what you're doing is you're basically telling that tree that it has way more nutrients than what it actually does. So it'll actually set a bigger crop.
Mm.
So that'll really help set. And then when you come back towards the fall, or maybe you go and do another application midsummer, that's going to help to size those apples.
Okay.
And anytime you're adding carbon, the plant's going to, you know, take that up to produce sugars. It'll make your fruit sweeter. And again, it'll size your fruit as well. So that's something that absolutely, that's a great application for that.
Yeah. I love this conversation, and I have so many questions for you that if I start asking you left and right, I think we're going to go on for another couple of hours. I want to be respectful of your time, but I do have one question, and I think this is important. And I think it's something that somebody alluded to. It's like, there's a lot of foliar sprays out right now. And I'm trying to think of products that are out there. Let's see, Deer Grow. There's a whole host of other companies that are out there. I think one of the questions that's come up was the calcium carbonate versus calcium chloride and what the difference might be. And I'm not calling out products. I mean, you can buy products like that all over the place. Really, is there a difference, and is there a benefit to the plant? I think that question comes up more than it needs to. So I kind of wonder what your take is on the two, calcium carbonate versus calcium chloride.
Yeah, I'm going to give you kind of two answers, because when you're looking at the calcium products on the market, and when you're looking at their liquid fertilizers, which that's not the only company, there's a ton of them that are coming out with that now.
Yes.
Recent.
Yep.
And we'll touch on both of those. But so calcium chloride in agriculture, we use that as a calcium input that's very cheap and easy. But when you do that, you have to think about the baggage. Your baggage of that is the chloride, whether you like that or not. But when you, I mean, not even going down that road of adding chloride, calcium chloride is just a calcium input. That's not going to react in the soil to change your pH. That's just going to change your calcium levels as well. So carbonate, calcium carbonate, what makes that reaction is the carbonate in that, when in the lime or the liquid lime. So that's going to react with the hydrogen in the soil in order to change your pH. And that's why I kind of brought that up earlier, talking about it has to be calcium carbonate. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to change pH, because that's what makes the reaction in the soil. So looking at that, I think that's why they call it an alternative. I think it's very good marketing, and it's just something that technically that's not going to change your pH. You're just going to change your calcium levels. And maybe when you go from not adding calcium to adding a bunch of calcium, you probably will see way better results, just because it's something you haven't done before. Maybe that's something your soil's lacking. But as far as changing pH goes, calcium chloride will not change pH.
Okay. Good response. Appreciate the candidness in that. Now let's talk about nitrogen. And everybody's used to putting on some type of nitrate, ammonium nitrate, whatever they're putting on their soil. What do you do? And do you think nitrogen is even a necessity? And one thing I want to just say, when I was giving a class this weekend, I was explaining how I approach this topic. So without my explanation, I want to hear your explanation. And what does nitrogen mean to you? Is it an essential? Do we need to add it? How do you approach nitrogen deficiencies? If there are nitrogen deficiencies, it depends on the crop and the crop uptake, but what are your thoughts there?
So I'm going to say, if I had to guess, probably about 80% of the time, I do not have nitrogen inputs on our crops when I give recommendations. Now, the other 20% of the time is going to be corn, is going to be screening, possibly brassicas, but it's mainly them nitrogen lovers, to where half the time we don't even put it down at planting. We're coming back with a foliar application That way we can get right through the plant, because anytime you add nitrogen to the soil, it's 30% efficient. One third basically will evaporate. One third is going to leach through the soil, and one third is available to be used by the plant and in the biology. So it's not very efficient. So coming from that point of view and kind of knowing that from the ag side, we can take a look at, okay, is that even worth us doing so, number one? And then number two, what would be the best time for that, or the most efficient way, best use of our dollars? That's why I like to come through with a foliar application of nitrogen on our corn, on our screens, or even on brassicas, to where we're not dealing with the soil at all. We can get right through the plant. I mean, the overspray is going to get in the soil and be there for the biology, and some of it might get taken up by the roots. But if we can get in right through the leaf and be super efficient that way, we don't need very much. It's not going to cost as much, and we can make that change very quickly. So technically, like I said, about 80% of my recommendations do not involve nitrogen at planting, and those other 20%, it's more of a foliar application. The only thing I'll say to that is there are some soils, maybe if you have really low organic matter and you do want to try to grow a screen, or you are trying to grow corn or maybe Milo, that's something that we will try to get something out at planting, just because you're going to need all the help you can get at that point. So we almost kind of have to, but that's kind of my take on nitrogen.
Okay. That's a good point. There's multiple forms of nitrogen to apply. And sometimes I think it depends on what the state of the plant is. Is it in reproductive state? Do you advise a variation or type of nitrogen, ammonium base? Otherwise, like, is there some, and there's all, you know, I just gave out a handout to everybody of all the variation and application opportunities. Like, what are you source? What are the sources for, et cetera, in this packet that I gave out everybody? What do you, is there any variation in nitrogen that is meaningful? Just like for folks that are applying the foliar, that if you're looking at a label?
Yeah. So urea based products are going to be basically only for vegetative. When you look at ammonium based products, those are going to be more for reproduction. So when we look at reproduction, that's going to mean, you know, more corn, that's going to be more bushels per acre. Or when we're looking at, you know, apples, we want that reproduction part of things. So most of the time I like to, like my liquid N, the Harper Growing Solutions product that we have, that's a mix. There's a little bit of urea in there, there's a little bit of ammonium in there, and it's a slow release. So it's something that I wanted to touch on both, because sometimes we do want that vegetative, you know, if our screens is struggling and we need to get that up, okay, well, that urea would be great for that. Or if we are trying to push our corn a little bit, having that ammonium in there is going to be great for that reproduction. So having that product with both in there is phenomenal. And I think that when you think about, like you said, those two forms and kind of what they're geared towards, what are your goals and what do you need? Maybe you do want urea, or maybe you want to put on AMS, ammonium sulfate.
Yeah, ammonium sulfate. Okay. I think good bits of information, Brad. I don't want to overwhelm the listeners with bits of this. I think this is pretty informative. I want people to check out your products. You can go to Harper Growing Solutions. I'm going to try, you know, hopefully we get the chance to meet up here, probably during hunting season, unfortunately, but we'll connect personally and we'll get to meet and talk a little bit more. I'm building a lot of this stuff on my own, and that's just not a smart way to be. I've got other things that I could focus in on, and it's nice to have an offering like this where, you know, I can call you up and utilize your product. I know John Comp said a lot of these things have sold out. So I think it's important for them to pay attention to product availability on your website or through his, et cetera. So just keep that in mind. Anything you want to end on? And I want to get you back on. So I've got a host of questions for you. I wanted to introduce people to you again, because it's been a little while.
Yeah, no, not a problem. And I mean, like I said, you let me know when and I can make that happen for sure. I think the biggest thing to look at when you're looking at any liquid limes, any liquid fertilizers, is reading that label. You know, see where that's coming from, how much sodium is in there, what's the actual makeup of that, or where is that coming from? Like when you look at fertilizers, is it chelated with EDTA? That's a huge one. That's something to kind of stay away from. or like the liquid lime, we talked about having, you know, calcium carbonate in there. It's kind of like seeds, you know, read that label, read that tag, see what's in there, see where it comes from. And that'll really help you to see if that's really going to do what you want it to do or not.
Well, good, Brad. Thanks for taking the time with me today. Good luck in your meetings the next few days, and hopefully everything continues to develop for you. I think you have great products. A lot of people follow you, and they appreciate what you're doing for the industry. And I know that, you know, you're ag based, but you know, you're a deer hunter at heart. You love this stuff. You know, this is what you're most passionate about, and you just are candid, and you love helping people, and that's why, you know, we've connected. So I appreciate you, and I appreciate all the, you know, the products that you're putting out there. So everyone follow Brad, follow his products, pay attention to what he's got coming out. I think there's some game changing stuff in there. And make sure you do your research. I think that was part of this, is be open, but do your research and be advised that there isn't a perfect product out there, but there's options. So start looking at what your options are to make, let's say, the perfect remedy or to employ change on your property. All right, man, that's it for me. And we'll hear from us again soon.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it. Always good catching up. And yeah, let me know when you want to do another.
Okay.
I'm up for it.
All right, sounds good. All right, talk soon. See you, Brad. Bye.
Maximize Your Hunt is a production of Whitetail Landscapes. For more information on how John Teeter and his team of experts can help you maximize your hunt, check out whitetaillandscapes.com.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.